remember, you said that your lead man, when you came in that first day, the lead man assigned each of you to the areas. What floor were you on? Do you recall?
The second floor. I was working the second floor.
And what was that like physically? Do you recall that? What it looked like and how it was set up?
Well, it was a big... I think that place was from... from the street clear out to the fence, maybe longer than that, but as wide as this fence in my yard.
So maybe 100 feet, 50 feet, something like that. And what part, was it all the same part that was being worked on that
whole floor? They had different machines on different things on different sections, but it was all in the same floor.
And the lead man was over how many people, do you recall?
No, I don't. Because we had so many lead men, we could just call anyone that was around on the floor.
Do you remember your first lead man, the one who made the assignment for you?
No, I don't. I should have remembered, but I don't. You know, if you think at that time that you're going to make history if you leave that long and take down all the, you know, it would really be interesting.
Now, who were the other women especially who were working around you? What were they like?
Well, at that time, I came the first time that I came across people of different states, from all the states. Because then L.A. was letting everybody, California was letting everybody come in from all over. Before that, during Depression, they wouldn't let nobody come in. They closed the gates for everybody. You could come in, providing you had money or a job waiting for you. But right after the war broke out, the doors were open up to what it is now. See, so I found it very fascinating to talk to people from all over, different accents, spoke different ways, actions were different, like from the white people that I knew all the time to decide what people that were coming. I thought it was so different, I couldn't understand.
Yeah. It could be the people from Oklahoma and Texas. Places like that?
Yeah, we had them from Texas. We didn't have that many from Oklahoma because L.A. didn't allow them too much to stay around in L.A. They used to come, like the Dust Bowl in the 30s, they used to come and stay in Baldwin Park and then go up north to where the pick food and all that stuff in the branches up there. But we didn't have them, and we had a lot of them from all over except Arkansas and Oklahoma. And very few from Texas. They were all from Michigan and Chicago, and Easterners.
And were they women like yourself who were married and had children, or were they young
people? Oh, yes. No, they were, most of them were like me, you know, my age. And they weren't very young ones, no, because the young ones hardly ever work at that time, too. And then the boys were all going in the service.
What, did you make friends with the other people at work there?
Yeah, I used to make friends easy because I wanted to know and see where they're coming from. And I heard some stories, too. There were women that say, you know, I never been close to a Spanish lady or Mexican, whichever you want to call them, because I think they were Southerners. We were taught that they kill you, that they always had knives, that they always, you know, and now we find out they're so different. They're so different. So I used to tell them. I used to go and tell my dad, and talk to my dad, you know what, they say that these people that are coming, never been where Mexican people are, and they say we carry guns, we knives, we kill, and my dad used to say, oh, well, that's ignorance, just forget about it. You be nice to them and explain to them. But if you see somebody's trying to undermine you, you get your guns and fight for what you believe and tell them you're wrong. So, and that's what I am. And I never had problems. In L.A., all my working years, I never had problems till I came to work in Baldwin Park. where they were mostly from Oklahoma and Texas. Then I knew what prejudice was and the way the different kind of people, what they were, that I couldn't, that I would never have known if I'd stay in L.A. the rest of my life. Because in LA, every now and then I used to hear, I hope you don't feel offended when I said, white trash. Mm-hmm. When I was young, I used to cry because my friends, my white friends weren't white trash. I don't see what, and nobody could explain it to me. Mm-hmm. Nobody could explain what it was until I came to Baldwin Park and I came across them. And then I started reading and finding out and really why were they called that. And then I couldn't believe people would live like that or act that way or what. And then the prejudice, but I was stubborn enough to stay there for 5 years to work
this
in...
This was in the 1960s then.
Uh-huh, in the 60s.
Okay, well, next time I really want to get into that. Uh-huh. I think it's very important. Uh-huh. But you're saying that during the war years, uh-huh, these women that were from other states, uh-huh, were, it was more that they were ignorant and they, uh-huh, had never encountered, uh-huh, any Spanish-speaking, uh-huh, people, uh-huh, before. Uh-huh. Now, who would you spend time with, for instance, on your breaks and on your lunch hour? Who would you eat with and take a break with?
Oh, we'd all get together on a table, uh-huh, and sit down and eat. Maybe today was different girls and tomorrow, but we'd all have different tables to, mm-hmm, sit on, and the same group would sit there all the time. Mm.
And it was all people right in your department?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would it be all women, or would there be some men who would join you?
Men come and sit down with us, too.
Mm-hmm. Did you have an eating area, or was this at your actual work area that you would eat?
Well, let me see. I think it was actually our work area, because we had benches.
Mm-hmm.
Unless we'd go outside. We used to have a lunch wagon. Mm-hmm. We used to come there, and sometimes we used to stay outside in the sun.
Can you describe the work process a little bit more, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
How would you stand, for instance?
Well, it depends. Now, who was riveting would stand.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was operating a punch press, I would sit down.
Mm-hmm. And when you were riveting, would you have to climb scaffolding for the higher?
No, it was a low one, a small one, because they had big ones, but they usually would get a big woman to, mm-hmm, operate the big ones. And like me, I'm small, so they used to give me a small one.
Oh, so you would maybe work on a panel that was 4 feet high or something like that?
No, see, this was a panel. And then we'd put it like this, and then you said, and punch a rivet,
and then a rivet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we guide it with our hand.
Uh-huh. Okay. Oh, you weren't using the rivet gun.
Oh, no, not the rivet gun. We were doing it with a...
Oh, and a machine.
And a machine, right.
Oh, I see.
Punch press, they used to call it. Okay. Because it wasn't a very large part. It was a small part.
It was that small?
No, it was bigger than this.
What, but maybe?
I'd say, about half of this table.
Mm-hmm. So maybe 3 feet by 2 feet.
Something. Yeah, because sometimes I had to get back here in order to get to the end of the...
And did you, is that what you did the whole time was on the punch press, or did you start with did you use a rivet gun at all?
Mm-hmm, I was in both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at times, you know, wherever I was needed.
So you did not do one thing the whole time then?
No, not one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was around doing different things, but it basically was the same thing.
But, like, in the course of the day, would you switch off and maybe rivet part of the time and work on the,
mm-hmm,
press,
mm-hmm,
the other part of the time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well, say, for instance, I was done with this part here, where I was working with this fellow, riveting, and then there was work over there that I had to do, or there was something in a rush that they wanted me to do it right away, so I had to leave what I was doing to go sit that the way they,
mm-hmm,
used to work it.
How did you feel about the work? Which of the jobs did you prefer?
Both. I didn't have no, they were both, I enjoyed both of them.
Did you find one easier than the other?
No.
Because with riveting, you would be standing and holding your arm up.
Uh-huh. But no, I didn't have to stand way up high. And if I did, we had a little, like a little bench,
mm-hmm,
too, so we could stand up.
Mm-hmm.
honestly, but I didn't have to go very high.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how big was your department? How many people would it be?
Well, there were quite a few people, you know, for a space like that, and they were just full. I can't exactly say how many,
mm-hmm.
but there were a lot of people working.
What were the working conditions like, in terms of things like heat or cold, the ventilation, all that sort of thing? What was that like?
Well, we had a ventilation because there was a lot of windows in those
mm-hmm.
buildings, and we had a lot of light. And
what was the noise like?
A lot of noise. There were machines that were going, there was a lot of noise.
Did you use any kind of protection?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not in my ears.
Were you able to talk to people during work?
Well, no, we couldn't. Unless we had to stop
mm-hmm.
to talk, because it's dangerous, you know, what you're doing. So we couldn't talk.
Now, what would your day be like? You would get up at what time?
Well, I'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'd see my husband off to work, and I'd cook cereal or something for the kids, and I'd get them up, and if I didn't have time to eat breakfast with him, I'd leave him the breakfast, and my mother would come and feed him breakfast and then send him off to school, because
mm-hmm.
she lived right next door.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to, my daughter, Norm, well, I always taught her since she was little, I taught her how to manage money. And I take it to the store with me and start teaching her what, because I figure I was working, she was the one that would take, you know, do little things for me. And only one thing I never did like her to do was turn the stove on.
Mm-hmm.
I have to pay up to everything that was supposed to be done, but never turn the stove on until I'd come home.
So she was about, what, 7 or 8 at that time when you were starting to work at Lockheed?
She was almost 10.
Mm.
She was about 9,
mm-hmm.
10. And of course my boy, I didn't trust him because he was always playing outside and always forgetful, and you know how boys are. So, no, she grew up to be pretty thrifty.
So she would, before you would come home, she would have started preparing dinner
then? Mm-hmm, she'd come home from school and if there was a note and tell her what I needed from the store. Well, I used to leave her so much money, then she'd go to the store and buy whatever I
mm-hmm.
needed and come home and do the little things I used to tell her to do, and that's all.
And then you would get home. Would you take your lunch with you? Prepare your lunch and take it?
Yes,
with you?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then you'd all at work, you'd all
mm-hmm,
get the
mm-hmm.
table. And then you'd get off work what time?
3:30.
Mm-hmm. And you were walking?
Yeah, we were walking.
So you'd come home and then what would you do?
Well, see, I work days, and then I work swing.
Oh, when did you switch to swing?
I think a year after I was there, I put the children to bed, then I'd be home in the morning to get them up and send them up to school.
Oh, she worked the graveyard shift, actually,
mm-hmm.
midnight to 7.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I found that to be, but I took sick. It was too much for me.
Now, when you were working days still, so for about a year you worked days,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and did the work change at all, or it was the same most of the time?
It was the same. Because
mm-hmm.
it started getting easier, because the longer we work, more experience you get, and then you learn how to do, you know, different little things, or you either get faster or slower or whatever.
Were you ever under pressure to speed up?
No.
How about
speed? We had a quota to put out.
Uh-huh,
yeah, we had a quota, and but it wasn't too much. I mean, it depends on your hands. Some of our hands are fast, some are slow. But
how about slack times? Were there periods where there wasn't very much work?
No, it's hardly, we were busy.
Mm-hmm.
We had breaks in the morning and the afternoon.
And, so when you were still working on day shift, though,
mm-hmm.
how would you manage things like doing laundry? She would do the shopping for you.
Mm-hmm.
and help preparing dinner. Mm-hmm. But how would you manage things like cleaning the house and the laundry and all of that kind of stuff?
On my days off, or sometimes, like when I was working graveyard, because actually swing was from 3:30 to 11, mm-hmm. like in the hospital, and then graveyard is from, and so I, on my time off, or whenever I, at night, if I feel like doing it, I would do. I never did like to do anything after 9:30 at night, after 9 o'clock. Because by 9 o'clock I had the kids in bed and I used to take my bath, and we didn't have showers at that time at home. We had baths. And I was ready, I'd be in bed by 9:30 for sure. I've always made that a point when I was working, to be in bed by 9:30 and read till 10 o'clock. And then turn around and go, drop the book and go to sleep.
Well, what was it like then when you shifted to graveyard? That must have been a hard change for you.
Yes, because sometimes I didn't sleep all day. I kept going and doing this and doing that, and I didn't sleep. And come 11:30, I'd go back to work, and I didn't sleep all day. Maybe for 2 or 3 days I would do that.
Just because it was so hard to get used to sleeping during the day?
Yes, and because I just wanted to keep on doing something, and I didn't get sleepy. I wasn't realizing that I was really burning myself out.
How did your husband feel about your working graveyard shift?
Well, he didn't like it to begin with, but then I said, well, look, I can be with the kids in the morning. Mm-hmm. At night, you're here with the kids, too, you see. So then he agreed to it, and he says, okay, that's what you want, okay.
So what would your life be like when you shifted over to graveyard? You would come home in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and get them all ready,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
and then when you did sleep, when would you sleep?
Well, but when I was really sleepy, I'd go to bed right after when I sent to school.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I used to sleep till 4 o'clock, and of course my husband was lenient, and there was no supper. He knew what was, or that Norma would come from school, and she started doing little things. See, we all help. Even the children were small, but we all had share.
Mm-hmm.
See? And I only had one girl. See? So they helped, little as they were, you know. And then my boy used to clean outside and empty the trash, and there were things that we all worked like a little team.
Mm-hmm.
See, I didn't have to nag my kids to do what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm.
Now, and you were working 6 days a week?
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah, in fact, they were working 7 days a week.
Did you put in a 24?
No,
mm-hmm.
no.
And you started at 75 cents an hour.
Uh-huh.
And then what, do you remember when you got your first raise?
I think 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think 3 months. Or 30 days. I can't recall that very well.
Do you recall any of the services at the plant, like counselors or shopping services, banking services, anything like
Nothing
that?
Nothing like that. We didn't even have group insurances or anything like that at that time. We didn't even have disability insurance. Disability didn't come out till John Kennedy is the one that gave us disability. See, so we took sick, we had to pay it out of our own money.
How much would you take home a week? Do you remember? In the poultry factory, you said it was $18.
I used to take all my check home because at that time they didn't take like they do now. See, Social Security didn't start in January of 1936, and it wasn't that much.
And I know they didn't take out income tax until about 1943 they started that.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. And now what, so how much would you end up earning a week then? Do you recall?
No, but I was making 75 cents an hour.
So about $30 a week. Well, no, you were booked, but you worked 48 hours, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. 48 hours.
So almost $35,
yeah,
something like that. And how much was your husband earning at that time?
Well, he wasn't earning very much either. Of course, it went up after the... He started making $5 a day after we got married. That's all he was making, $5 a day. Yeah. Then things started going up. Mm-hmm. But with $5 a day, gosh, you could go to the store with $1 and bring what you bring now with
$20. He was working as a mechanic where then?
On 7th and Los Angeles for Mr. Winkle. He used to have a It was a big parking lot and garage at the same time. And all the businessmen from downtown L.A., because he's right here in downtown L.A., used to go there, park their cars, and had their car fixed. And Mr. Winkle was the one that taught him and his brother to be mechanics. Okay. Now his brother, he took it up. He went, grew up to be a, a diesel mechanic until he retired. But my husband didn't like it.
Oh. He didn't think of going into war, one of the war industries, as a mechanic.
Yeah, he went in the war. He was a ground mechanic during World War II, my husband.
Oh, and where was that?
Well, he was inducted here in California, in L.A. Then he was in San Pedro, and they shipped him out to Texas. He didn't go overseas.
So he wasn't home when you were working at Lockheed?
No, he wasn't. And, well, he was home, oh, but let me see. A year after I was working, they inducted him.
I see.
But he was a ground mechanic. He wasn't, he didn't go overseas.
Now, how was that for you then, once he was gone and you were taking care of everything by yourself?
Well, that's when our problems started. That's when after he came, after the war was over, him and I were separated for good.
So actually, after, by the time... When he was inducted, it was practically the last time that you were living together.
Yes, when he was inducted, because when he came back, we didn't live together again.
Now, when you were working graveyard, was he still home?
He was still home. He was still home.
What was your idea as you were working at Lockheed during the war years? What you would do? Did you think you might want to continue there after the war?
No, no, because I had nursing in my mind.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was from way back.
In fact, I should have gone to a general hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They only require 1 year.
We can just continue this take for a few more minutes. When you went to work there then at Lockheed, what were your thoughts about what you would want to do when the war was over? You say you didn't think you wanted to continue.
Mm-mm. Well, I always wanted to go back to nursing. So then I finally went to school, practical nursing school, Southern California.
After the war, though.
Yeah, way after
that.
But
during the war, how long did you end up staying at Lockheed then?
Let's see. To 1944.
And then what made you decide to leave?
Well, I wasn't feeling too well. And I noticed my health was breaking down, so I thought I figured I was working a little too hard. And then I stopped working, because after my husband and I were separated, I moved in with my mother and dad and the children.
You stopped working before the end of the war, though?
Yes, before the end of the war.
And were you working, you were still working graveyard at that time? Basically the same work in the same place the whole time, the whole 2 years?
Yes. I was on the boat, the number 2 and number 3. See, because they used to, we work in number 2, then we transfer to number 3, and then back to number 2, we were like that.
Oh, back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be on a couple weeks here and then a couple weeks there. Mm-hmm. You might every other day be switching around?
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice any changes in the women who were coming into work? Were there more Spanish or Mexican or black women beginning to come in?
Mostly white.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly white.
And from out of the state?
Yeah, and from out of the state. Now, There was more Mexican women and black women going into the shipyards in San Pedro.
Uh-huh.
But not in there. Not here where I was working.
Did you see any of the women from work outside of work?
No. Mm-mm.
What sort of, especially after your husband was gone in the Army, was there any sort of, did you have any kind of social life at all?
Oh, I used to go nightclubs and to the beach.
Mm-hmm. And who would you go with?
Friends, mm-hmm. You know, different friends, like girlfriends that were divorced too, and then we made a couple of friends, my brothers. My brother used to take us, and he introduced us to some of his friends, and that's how I met my second husband.
I see. But now, before you were divorced, would you go out to the nightclubs? And
No. I didn't go out for quite a while after I was divorced, because, you see, we were separated for a while, then I went back again.
When was that?
And see, we were separated in 43.
Mm-hmm.
And then towards the end of 43, we went back together again. And then we were together until, the end of 1944.
So you were together when you quit?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But was he here or in the Army in Texas?
Well, he had already come home.
Oh,
he wasn't in the service anymore.
Oh.
But he went AWOL and he got a discharge for discharge.
Oh. Was that because of his drinking?
Yes, and because, see, he knew that I wanted, that wasn't going back to him, and though he came back and he pleaded, and I said no, and then he got into, he went and got drunk, and he had an accident, and I went on Central, and Central Central Bank, he came and picked him up, and then he got a dishonorable discharge after that. But it was all in a Canada, it was nothing to do, he wasn't doing anything that he shouldn't have done, it was just his drinking that caused him problems. And up till the end, when we were divorced, and even when he died, about a month before he died, he told me, after so many years I've been divorced, and I saw him a month before. He died 2 months before my son. My son never knew that his dad had passed away.